This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, folks. There is a lot happening. Reports that Dennis Allen has been fired as the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, and some news agencies are reporting that the Saints have just released a statement saying Darren Rizzi will be the interim head coach. He's the special teams coach. And in fact, we'll talk more about that later when we visit with Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer, at 11:30. We'll visit with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We've got a lot to talk about. The jobs report, pretty weak. We'll talk about Google and their fines. We'll also talk about EVs and what's going on there relative to mandates and consumer demands. And at 11 o'clock, we're going to visit with John Cuvion. John is going to join Dave Cohen and myself tomorrow night from 8 to 12 for election coverage. He's the founder of JMC Analytics and Polling. And we'll talk about, obviously, the presidential race, what's going on there, and more importantly, what's going on in the key swing states, but more importantly, also the down-ballot races. Who's going to control the House? Who's going to control the Senate? Because the reality is, as you look at these races for Congress, a lot of whatever happens in these down ballot races will definitely influence what the executive branch or the president will be able to do, right? There are some issues that are decided by a simple majority and some that are not. And if you just have simple majorities in either one of the House or the Senate, there's a whole lot that the president-elect will not be able to do. And if you control both houses as the president with the simple majority issues, there's a lot you can do relative to those. If you have a split, which is what a lot of people desire, they love to see that balance out there because things and the pendulum, they don't shift very much. And when they do, the pendulum does not swing that far out to the left or to the right. And a lot of folks find comfort in that. And that's one of the reasons that I like to talk about the down ballot races as much as I do about the presidential race. Because when it comes to governing, there are limitations that are in place as a result of the turnout of the Senate and the House. And not unlike the presidential race, the polls are all over the map on this. I mean, there are so many different races that are inside the margin of error. Flip a coin. I get asked this question every day. What do you think? I don't know. I mean, you follow these polls and they're just so dead even, it is absolutely insane, and we'll just wait and see. We may not know till Thursday or Friday, quite frankly. A lot of folks are saying, oh, no, we'll know by Wednesday night. There are a lot of these key swing states that are very slow in returns. They have crazy election laws as to how they do things and the like, and that's why we're seeing already some preliminary lawsuits being filed and things of that nature of actions that have been taken thus far because they have these crazy laws on the books. And it's almost as if they don't even consider how this is going to work operationally. And yeah, people that are very aggravated by this and they're irritated by it and they're calling people out and they're videoing what's happening at some of the early voting polls and the like. And it's just crazy. You wish that there would be a more secure or more consistent way of dealing with a lot of these issues. I wish that there would be a way that when we vote on these federal elections, meaning when we vote for president and we vote for members of Congress every 4 years, on those elections that we that should be all we vote for. It shouldn't be riddled with all these other state issues and just up or down on the federal votes. A lot of folks like to stick all kinds of other issues that work to the benefit of a Democrat or a Republican or otherwise. And I think that's crazy. Why would we want to let that influence the turnout? We should just be voting on these folks in a singular fashion, and I think we would be much better served for it. So we're going to talk about all those far-reaching issues there. And just a friendly reminder, tomorrow's Election Day, November 5th, get out and vote for sure. Tyler Fussell will join us from the Fussell Group Insurance Advisors. We're going to talk about the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 and how it impacts Medicare plans. We just are in the enrollment period started in October, and a lot of these will take effect in January of 2025. Some took effect in January 2024, and we'll talk about what the impacts of same really are. In New Orleans, there's going to be a vote relative to the New Orleans Housing Trust Fund. BGR came out against the passage of this, and what it would do, it would be a 2% budget dedication in the charter of 2% of the budget that would be for housing investment, new housing investment. But from my perspective, the council's already said that they're going to do this, whether or not they do this or not, relative to changing the charter on this issue. It obviously places more restriction on the budget because you know that 2% comes off the top and it has to go to that. If they're going to do it anyway by ordinance, why are we going through this exercise? I think the reason we're going through this exercise is that this way, this issue is not going to have to be revisited in every budget year. And they know that they will have the flexibility of taking that 2% money, which is somewhere between $17 and $20 million, in order to deal with housing. But they really haven't revealed a whole lot of information about what they intend to do. The priorities are otherwise. They've provided four areas that they're concerned with. And if they dedicate some money to each and every one of these four areas, they're not going to make a meaningful impact on affordable housing in this city at all. And that's part of the thing. Why would we restrict ourselves? Why would we do so knowing of all of the other issues that we have out there that the city is facing, that we would take 2% of the budget and dedicate it to this? Dedications have always really hamstrung city government for emerging priorities and otherwise. The other thing I don't like about this issue, as opposed to the ordinance, what if they don't execute? You know how hard it is to go undo something in the city charter? And that's something that you should consider. I'm not saying which way to vote on this issue. I'm just throwing out considerations from my perspective and my understanding in the operations of government. As a CFO of an organization, I know exactly why and where things are and where, you know, things you can hide, so to speak, and otherwise. And I just don't think this is a good move for this city at this time. We're not able to meet the budgetary expectations necessary to address some of the other issues that we face in infrastructure today. There are the housing activists are saying we're 4,500 units short, and that number is growing every year. We've not been able to reverse that trend. And I don't think a sum of money, $17 to $20 million, is going to reverse it at all. In fact, the other day when I had one of the housing organizations on the show, I asked that very question. And even if we just directed these funds to one priority, where would we be? Would we even be able to knock down the growth of the numbers that are needed in this city and address those? And the answer was no. So why are we doing this? I mean, the fact of the matter is that this should be a lot like the tax issue that I've talked about. We should think about this thing in a much broader sense. We should educate the public as it is and be, you know, a lot more open and transparent about what it is that we're going to be able to accomplish here, none of which has been done. A lot of these same observations made by BGR, the Bureau of Governmental Research. So I just don't know whether or not this is a good thing for this city at this time. The BGR took a position against that proposition. It's something to think about. Obviously, affordable housing is a big challenge for this city, not unlike a lot of other cities. But I'm not so sure that this is the best approach. And I'll give you another example. So LaToya Cantrell's administration is, according to the most recent article by Ben Myers and NOLA.com, is going to embark upon this plan to increase the number of electric vehicles in New Orleans and increase charging stations and things of this nature. And the goal for the city is for 40%. Listen close. 40% of all passenger and light-duty vehicles registered in Orleans Parish to be battery-operated by 2035. That's, as he points out, a long way to go in light of the fact that electric vehicles make up just 1% of the registered vehicles in New Orleans today. Well, is that really a top-notch priority that we have in this city? I mean, really? We can't even get folks to register their automobiles. We have people driving around without license plates, much less a brake tag. I mean, there's so many things that we can't police and regulate at this point in time as it just deals with automobiles, and we're going to embark upon EVs and spending money on charging stations and everything else, and hopefully their intention is to do it maybe by federal grants. If they start spending city money on this, this could even be worse for us. We're tying up valuable assets and resources for what? We're missing all kinds of other opportunities. That the whole automobile situation in the city is not sacrosanct now. But we're going to set a goal for 40%? I mean, we're hearing similar things out of in the presidential race, similar things that came out of the Biden administration. We're going to actually talk about what some of the auto manufacturers think about this in a 12 o'clock hour with Guy Williams. There are a lot of folks that are retreating off of this. We have a tire disposal problem here. What do you think the battery disposal problem is going to be if 40% of our vehicles in the city of New Orleans are EV vehicles? No one really talks about what do you do with these batteries when they reach their life expectancy. Where do we think those are going to go? Right? We can't figure out tires. Batteries are a challenge of a whole different dynamic. Much more difficult, no plan. In fact, we don't have a national plan. We're talking about embarking upon EVs. We have no plan for battery disposal. We don't know where we're going to put these things, right? But what we do know that EV vehicles actually, tire consumption is at a much faster pace because of the weight of the vehicle. So it would just exacerbate our inability to deal with tire disposal. But here we are, we're off and running because the sound bites of EVs all sounds great. Nobody really wants to talk about what the downstream implications are and whether or not this should be a priority for this city. And whether or not we have the excess capital to go running out here like the chameleon. You know, we want to be all things to all people, not recognizing that we simply don't focus on the absolute priorities, like maybe cleaning out drains or maybe ensuring that water bills are correct or maybe fixing potholes at times of the year that are not in advance of a major event that's coming to the city, right? Or maybe just simply collecting all the taxes that are due, understanding that we very well may have a tax base base that's sufficient to finance city government. There are a whole lot of different things out there that maybe we should consider before we're off and running, taking on all of these other priorities. And I know it's important to the mayor. She's traveled for, you know, pretty much all over the world as the climate czar of New Orleans, you know, and is bringing back all that there is and all that they're doing in other places. But a lot of the other places that she's visiting, when there's rainfall, the water moves off the city streets. The city streets are adequately built and adequately maintained. In fact, the elevators in the government buildings, they actually worked with about a 98-99% proficiency rate, right? They don't have rats running through the walls and, when they die, stinking up the office buildings. Their government buildings can actually pass a code inspection. These are the things that we should be focused on first. We need to address the failures and the frailties of city government, its assets, and the manner in which we govern before we start going off on these lofty ideals of thinking that we are going to promote EVs to reach a 40% of all vehicles registered in a city of New Orleans. Now, that may not be as lofty as what we thought before, because this whole registration thing is a mess. So, you know, at the point of sale, it gets registered somewhere. But after that, who knows? Because once that license tag expires, you go into Never Never Land. Love to know the percentage of vehicles in the city that are not registered any longer. That would be an interesting stat to consider before we start jumping on 40% of all registered vehicles to be battery operated by 2035. All right, folks, we've got to get to a break. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. When we return, we'll visit with Tyler Fussell. She is with the head of the Fussell Group Insurance Advisors, and we'll talk about the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 relative to Medicare and how it's modified some of the provisions of same that will go into effect in January of 2025. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season, but this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Tyler Fussell from the Fussell Group Insurance Advisors. And just a reminder, Allen, the head coach of the Saints, has been released from the Saints organization. And Darren Rizzi is the interim head coach. He's a special teams coordinator. So I apologize. I wanted to say that before I started talking about Tyler. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you, Newell. How are you? And I forgive you for putting Dennis Allen before me. That's okay.
well, thank you. We have news coming from every direction right now. It's like crazy.
I know. And, you know, that's a big deal right now. The Saints in this season is not great. So, you know, that's a big deal.
No, absolutely. What is a big deal, though, is some Medicare plan changes that will take effect in January 2025. We've had some that took effect in January 2024 as well as a result of the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. So tell us about the primary impacts that we're facing.
So, you know, the Inflation Act of 2022, the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 has numerous facets tied into it. One of them focusing on the prescription drug plan for seniors. And one of the things that started this year in 2024 was that it was mandated by the Inflation Reduction Act that insulin would be $35, would be capped at $35 for seniors. But that cap is only, or that $35 price is only for those drugs that are on the formulary for that prescription drug plan. So what I'm talking about with that is many of these prescription drug plans, whether it's a standalone plan or it's tied into a Medicare Advantage plan, they have a formulary, and the formulary will have a list of medications that is covered by the plan. If your insulin is on that plan's formulary, and it is a true insulin, it's not one of these GLP ones such as Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, we're talking about a true insulin. If it is covered on the plan's formulary, then the most the client will pay is $35, which is great for a senior, right? Because let's face it, insulin can be very expensive. One of the other things that has happened in...
Tyler, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
In your experience, because you do a lot of work in this field relative to Medicare,
yes.
When you look at these formularies, are they limited to just one or two insulins, or are they pretty broad-based and the likelihood of your insulin being on that formulary is relatively high?
So that's a good question, Noel. They have become more limited. Typically, a client can ask for a formulary exception if it is not on the formulary. That is not always granted. And one of the things you will find going into 2026 is those formularies are going to become more narrow, which we can talk about as well.
So what is the motivation for that? I mean, because it would
yep.
seem to me, I guess, that all of these insulins... Let me ask the question this way. What percentage of all of the insulins that are available actually appear on a Medicare or Medicare plan formulary? Is it all of them or half of them what? Do we know?
No, I would say it's probably, I would roughly give 25-30%.
Wow.
Here's the thing, Noel, is... Medicare says these are the drugs you have to cover in each specific category, and the plan is allowed to pick from that list. They have to cover at least a name brand and a generic in every treatment aspect, or how do I want to say, in every such as like an arthritis medication or an insulin
right.
or you know, that type of thing. So they have to cover at least a generic and a name brand. You will find on most of the formularies right now, there is at least two or three insulins that are covered.
So do we know?
Does that help?
Well, I mean, because, you know, we heard a lot of folks, you know, inside the Beltway, both Democrats, Republicans, talking about how great this $35 per month diabetes medicine benefit was
right.
going to be. But if we're only covering 30% of 100% of the total insulins available, do we know, you know, how much of the prescriptions that are out there that 30% actually covers? Because if that's a similarly situated number, this is not a good thing, right? It's not nearly as impactful as we... Okay.
Let me rephrase that, Noel. So I would say each carrier is only covering a percentage of it. They're not...
So that was the question I was asking. The totality of all of these plans in Medicare, are they reaching a 100% competency rate of all insulins, or do we know what that number may be?
I really don't know. I don't know what
okay.
the number
right.
is.
So I'm glad we cleared that up.
Yes, I'm talking about plan specific. If you look at each individual plan, they're covering roughly 2 to 3. So I would assume that's probably 30-40% of the insulins that are being covered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, each plan has their own plan design, their own formulary. So, but that's where we come in to help. You know, Noel, we're
right.
able to sit down with them and be able to look at each plan and say, okay, Mr. or Mrs. Smith, your insulin may not be covered on this specific plan, but this plan, it is covered. So that's where our agents come in and are able to help clients.
So what other impacts did we see in 2024, and what will in some of them change again, I guess, in 2025, right?
Correct. So you are going to see free vaccines. So before, the client was having to pay a copay on their vaccines. Of course, having free vaccines is extremely important for seniors, right? Because we want to keep our seniors healthy, and we also want to keep it financially solvent for them or sound. In 2026, you will see a small formulary of about 10 drugs that have now been have negotiated prices, which I'm sure, you know, everybody has heard about. That's been a hot topic. There is some concern with that because the pharmaceutical companies or the pharmaceutical industry has filed suit to put a halt on that. So we'll see how that plays out in 2025. And then, of course, now we have the lower out-of-pocket drug costs starting in 2025 with a $2,000 annual maximum out-of-pocket, which this year they did do away with the donut hole or the cover, or I'm sorry, the catastrophic coverage. Next year in 25, they'll be doing away with the actual donut hole. So now the client will either pay their deductible if their plan has one, and then they will pay 25% of the cost of the drug, up to a maximum of $2,000 out of pocket.
So you're looking at overall, it leads to a savings. Then is what I'm trying to get to.
It leads to a savings. So this is a double-edged sword. Is 2025 prescription drug coverage going to be great for a senior? Absolutely. However, there is potential negativity dripping from it, because in years past, including this year, the insurance carrier typically covers 50% of the drug cost, and then CMS covered a portion of it, and then the actual pharmaceutical company covered a portion of it. In 2025, the insurance carrier will now cover 75 to 80% of the drug cost. So you're going to see some changes in drug plans for 2026. You will see, could be smaller formularies, higher copays, higher premiums on drug plans. As for the agent population, some of them, we are already seeing drug plans not paying commissions on certain plans.
So the skeptic in me says that for the first couple of years of this plan, it all works out. It works to the benefit of the consumer, okay. and then we pay the bill.
You're 100% right. You're 100% right.
So we pay the bill in 2026. So let me ask you this, because I was doing some back of the envelope calculations the other day about this, the donut hole and everything else, and your drugs will be capped at $2,000 annually. But because of some of the increases, if you spend less than that $2,000, and that's historically what you do, it seemed to me that you actually may end up having paid a little more. Is that correct or incorrect?
So there are some clients who maybe have never reached the $2,000 because they were on all generics. They didn't have name brand medication. I don't know that they're necessarily going to see a major change. This is really going to affect those individuals who have the high-priced medications that have a lot of name brand medications, not just generics. That's where you're really going to see a shift.
Right. So in the end, where do you think all of this ends up? I mean, obviously, we're in the midst of this election. There's been a lot of promises made about this. A lot of the provisions of the Inflation Reduction Act don't go into effect until 2026. So, you know, the negotiated drug price thing is, as you said, in litigation, but most of that is not going to take effect until 2026. So it's still premature at this point. What do you think this, what's your gut tell you where this ends up?
My gut tells me that we're going to see some big changes come 2026 in prescription drug plans, as well as in possibly Medicare Advantage plans. And that
and
would
it's
be tied
to be driven by the cost to government as it relates to these plans.
It's going to be driven by the cost to the carrier, what the carrier is having to eat in drug costs, as well as their reimbursement from Medicare, and then utilization. There's so many things that go into that. But I know that this new formula or drug plan structure is going to be very costly to the carrier.
Which means they pass the cost on to the consumer unless they're restricted to do so, and then you have less carriers, less choices, and none of that works well from a supply and demand standpoint, right?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, the insurance carrier is here to make a profit, and their profit margins have already been streamlined due to the Obamacare ruling that they could only make a certain percentage of profit every year. So, you know, as that's starting to get squeezed and squeezed, it's, you know, the juice eventually comes out and it's got to go somewhere. And you and I both know that's going to result in, you're going to see more, I would expect to see more layoffs within the insurance industry. I would expect to see changes to compensation to agents. I would expect to see benefit changes for carriers making benefit changes to their plans. All of that's going to happen as a trickle-down effect, is the more that the carrier has to take on for cost or for the prescription drug plan.
So this is, it's safe to say this is not all things to all people. This is kind of like income taxes and, you know, dealing with the IRS. It's good to get a little advice about what you're doing, because you could make a mistake and it could harm you. It could hurt you financially.
Right.
And there's no sense in doing that. It's just a question of spending a little time to educate oneself.
Correct. And I think it's really important that somebody would have a local agent here in the state. I am a big proponent for people staying away from those 1-800 numbers, because the people on the other end are not familiar with networks here in Louisiana, with doctor networks and pharmacies and formularies. And I think the more people gear towards using a local agent and having someone who truly knows what's going on and able to help them and give them the right information, I think it's going to be vital over the next couple of years.
As what used to be said, that all politics are local, it seems to me that all healthcare is local.
Yes.
Tyler Fussell with the Fussell Group Insurance Advisors. Thank you so much for joining us. Truly appreciate your time and your insight.
Absolutely.
Have a great week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, ma'am. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll go to the talk lines. Love to hear from you. Tomorrow's Election Day. And you can go to our website and see the most recent reporting that we have on Dennis Allen leaving the Saints. We'll be right back. Stay with us. So at 11:30, we're going to visit with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, about the most recent firing of Dennis Allen as the head coach of the New Orleans Saints. So I look forward to that conversation at 11:30. Let's go to Mark. Mark, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Noel, thanks for taking my call. You know, I don't know if you talked about this at all, but, you know, when the election is being certified, it's certified by the vice president. The vice president is Kamala Harris. What effect do you think that's going to have?
I don't think it's going to have any effect. I think they're going she's going to do her constitutional duty, whether it's Donald Trump or whether it's her.
But if she wins, what do you think Trump's going to do if that happens?
I don't know that anybody cares what Trump's going to do.
Well, he did something pretty.
You either bring the evidence, or you don't. And I said this last time. We had a lot of chatter, a lot of rhetoric about individual, you know, small instances of things that were anomalies in the election process. They had every opportunity to bring the evidence, and they didn't bring it. I mean, they might have been able to prove that there were one-offs here, there, and everywhere, and they've already had some one-offs leading up to the election tomorrow, but none of which, and we don't know this yet, that would change the course of the outcome of the election. It, you know, when you have humans involved in any process, there are frailties of the process. And if we start from there, then we don't make as big a deal out of all of this. We look at it. We see what's actually happened. I'm not completely comfortable with the way some states handle it. I think it's crazy. But that's their choice. That's what a constitutional republic's all about. You got to bring the evidence. You either have it or you don't. And the last time, they didn't have it. So whether it's a D or an R, whoever the complaining party is, bring the evidence. And, you know, they'll deal with it from that perspective inside of the Senate. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Mike Johnson and what he said he was going to perform his duty. Well, it doesn't really have much to do with all of that. It's, you know, that lies in the Senate. So we'll see where this plays out. But I have all the confidence that it's not going to get stuck there. I said then that Trump was selling people a pig in a poke about the ability of Mike Pence to stand up and not certify that vote. And I'm going to stick with that because I firmly believe it. I've done the research on it. I think Mike Pence did the right thing. And, you know, they had every opportunity to bring the evidence. They did not. Plain and simple. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with John Cuvion, political pollster, strategist, and founder of MC Analytics and Polling. He's going to join Dave Cohen and I tomorrow evening from 8 to 12, and we'll talk about a few of the things that we'll be covering. And Bobby Hebert joins us at 11:30 to talk about the most recent firing of Dennis Allen.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you news stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.